Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
We are back. It is a very special podcast. It is April 10th. We have a fantastic episode lined up here. I am joined, as always, by my boy, who is now on the other side of his bachelor party. He is all bachelored boyed out. Big dog. How we doing?
Dan, doing well. Ho. Recovering quite nicely from the old bachelor party here, you know, hanging in there. Recovery's been great. And, got to shout out the crew that was with me. Great crew. We did miss you. Of course, Dan was invited, but he is dedicated to the game and could not make it, which is okay. I understand it. It's peak season. He's got a baby on the way, like tons of factors. So just the fact that he was there in spirit, I just hope everybody knows.
I was also the best man in a wedding, and I didn't go to his bachelor party either for lacrosse. So don't feel bad.
No, I did not take it personally at all. But it was a great time. We appreciated you in spirit. But yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, everybody that knows me kind of gets that too. Like, nobody really thinks twice about it.
Exactly. We know, well, this is your life, man. Like, I get it.
People get it.
Yeah.
Any good pod appropriate stories that you can drop? Remember, we have lots of mom listeners too. We always talk about the dads, but honestly, it's the D3 moms out there that we love the most.
They do hold a special place in our heart, I would say.
So keep them in mind, but any.
True. We played a lot of pool. It was snowing quite a bit, so we got in the hot tub, did some hot tub chilling in the snow. That was
pretty sick. A York party.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Bunch of dudes in a hot tub. That was pretty much it. But no, we played some Dungeons and Dragons, you know, got really nerdy one night. Ooh. So, oh yeah. We had a blast.
Did you win?
Oh, we won. We successfully beat the wizards out of the tower. Saved the tavern, and we won free mead for life.
Who was Tim Woods?
I had my cousin as the Tim Woods.
Nice.
He was electric.
That's cool. I think I would love to try it. I've never played the game, so I can't be a Tim Woods. What do they call him? What's his real name?
The old Dungeon Master.
Dungeon Master. Thank you.
The term there. Mm-hmm.
I thought that's what it was, but didn't want to tell on myself as a non-D&D-er.
There it is. Yep. You sound natural already.
All right. Well, I know everybody loves the banter. Wait, did you miss anything did you miss swarm events?
I did miss all the swarm events.
Oh no.
I felt terrible about, but good news.
Do they know that you were there?
They 100%. They're like, Coach Caleb, why aren't you gonna be there? I was like, guys, got the bachelor party. I'm so sorry.
What that
I'm
means? Be there in spirit. You know what any of that is?
They all knew what a bachelor party was. We had practice Monday, and they're like, "Oh, how are you doing, Coach Caleb?"
I guess their parents told them probably.
Yeah, 100%.
They're old enough. I don't know.
But good news, they went 3-0. The boys went 3-0. Yep, won the weekend. So all positive.
How
stuff.
Old are they? Again?
They're 7th graders. So what?
Oh yeah, 13, I don't care if 14? They won then. Did they have fun?
Oh, they had a blast.
There you go.
They got to play new teams in Philly. That's always fun, right?
Did they stay in hotels or did they go like a day trip?
I think a couple of them might stay in hotels, but most make day trips, I believe. Especially if they're like 8 a.m. game versus 11 a.m. start game. Well, I mean, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that factors in. Week to week.
All right. Well, speaking of people that do some traveling and go to games from week to week, let's talk about some of these D3 LACs teams. Lots of movement in the top 20, so go ahead and check that out if you haven't already. A lot of movement. Arrows next to every single team except for the teams in the top three.
Top three.
But that's already seen movement as you are listening to this. We're on Wednesday, and Tuesday night saw St. Lawrence go down at the hands of Middlebury. So already seeing way more movement within the rankings even already. Big Dog, I know you were pretty booked up this weekend, obviously. I tried to keep you in the loop, send you some updates, so on and so forth. But with all that in mind, I think you leading the course of the direction of where we go from game to game, me hitting more of the analyst side of things is probably the better route for this week compared to other weeks where we bounce around a little bit.
Love that, Dan. Yep.
So officially turning it over to you to be the host for the rest of the podcast.
All right.
Until we get to Coach Rabo, and then I'm taking over. I'm going back into host mode, demoting you, but then we'll re-promote you on the backside of that.
Love it. Appreciate that. Yep. I feel super honored to have the privilege here. I promise to be a gracious host as I take you on this journey that was last week. So without further ado, this is a game that I did get to catch a little bit of, so I want to jump into it right away here, and that's got to be the Tufts Wesleyan upset, you know, right off the bat, highlight of the weekend.
Well, we probably don't need to do too much of this one, because we do get into it with Coach a little bit, which have we already said that Coach is coming on this podcast? Was that?
I don't think we've mentioned it just yet. No, I don't think so.
Well, make sure you stick around and listen for us to link with Coach Rabo to talk about everything Cardinals, but the Tufts win as one of those items. And like we said, kind of everything in the old Wesleyan Cardinals universe.
Yep. That was an awesome interview. What a great coach. Great guy. Some awesome insights I never got to think about. So. Loved everything he had to say.
I'm sure you guys, it feels like a budding relationship. Not that like,
I think we hit it off right from the get-go. And D3 pod listeners will know this. From the get-go, I said, Wesleyan's my fun team this year. You know, they're going to score a lot of points. They're going to be in a lot of games. It's going to be fun. And boom, look where we're at now.
And you were sure to rub that in his face right from the very start. Make sure he knew.
I had to let him know.
Did it make you feel a little more comfortable after that to realize, like, okay, he knows that, like, you know, I like him. It's important for it. It's not necessarily important for you to be liked, but it's important for you to know that that person knows that you like them.
Yeah, exactly that. And I didn't want him to think I'm a new fan here, you know? Like, oh, you'd be tough. Let me jump on the bandwagon. Like, no, I've been day fair. One. Like,
okay,
like,
that's the more fair point, I think, actually.
Yeah. That was my whole mindset. Like, I'm not new blood here. I've been around for a little bit.
All right. Well, you mentioned that you got to see a little bit of it. I saw a lot of it of it. And for the record, whatever watching Big Dog didn't do this weekend, I got to make up for. So D3 Lax Pod is prepared.
As always. Yeah. But yeah. So this one, I mean, it was a tight battle and I was just kind of waiting for Tufts to pull away. You know, we saw the Wesleyan runs here and there, but Tufts came back in the third quarter, tied it up. I think it was 11-11 going into the fourth quarter. And then I was telling the boys at the BP, I was like, this is it. Just watch Tufts pull away. Here we go. And didn't seem to happen. I didn't have the old fortune-telling spirit that I normally do. So tough to see go out. But, you know, we did see some awesome stuff, especially Connor Selfridge, who we talked to Coach about a little bit. But he made some huge saves in the fourth quarter, kept the Cardinals in play there, and ended up pulling it out. I absolutely loved it. But, Dan, I know you got to really dive into it a bit. So give the people a little bit more of the ins and outs of what happened here.
Yeah, I feel like there were two kind of hinge points. I've different runs at different points, and I think you said it well. Of not great, you said it well.
Thank you.
You were waiting, not great, but you said it well. Like you were waiting for a Tufts run. And I kind of felt like, okay, as you get into it, like you said, you go into the fourth quarter at 11-11. And just the way that both of these teams play, it's like, okay, one of these teams is going to make a run. Which one is it going to be? You know, like I never necessarily like thought the way that you were in terms of like, okay, you're just like waiting on that like jumbos, you know, go that kind of like seems to always happen. Just because of the way that like Wesleyan was attacking the pressure, and coach talks about it, but like it felt like they were so composed that like whatever Tuss was going to get, it was going to come more earned than perhaps what normally happens during some of those runs where it's like failed clear leads to an easy one in transition that leads to a face-off win that leads to a pole goal in transition. And then it's like, you know, two turned one, like you turned a nothing, a clearing situation into a two goal spread the opposite direction. And now you're like reeling and you lose that composure. And it felt like, you know, Wesleyan just kind of always was able to kind of regain things and match the like athleticism that was needed in the middle of the field without going into this like, you know, football meathead, put my head down mode, you know, like it was a composed, like skilled version of, you know, athletes in the middle of the field.
That's a good point. Yeah. And really great composure by Wesleyan too. You know, that's a big game against a team that, you know, they haven't beaten in a few years. So to have that composure in the fourth quarter and really to stick to their guns was, I think, a really, really impressive feat for them.
And have to talk a little bit about like the zone, which is one thing that obviously Wesleyan does. It's identity, right? Like it's part of, you know, the way that they play lacrosse. That can't be understated for, you know, perhaps new listeners or people that just aren't quite familiar with that. We're happy to bridge that gap, you know? But to me, like Tufts was always a team for the last few years that like, I felt like you couldn't do that too, you know, like they had shooters from the outside that were going to make you pay. They were too slick below the goal. And now all of those like slick feeds were creating these high opportunities, high percentage opportunities for strong shooters all over the field that like the zone didn't really work with. And I felt like that matchup, you know, obviously just like was a better kind of fit in this, you know, in that 60 minutes of that matchup.
Yep.
And I feel like, you know, like we said, this is obviously a huge win. The NESCAC is incredibly deep. You know, they always have this type of like element of everybody eating everybody. For the last few years, it's been Tufts on top while the rest of everybody kind of devours each other. But it's not like totally shocking to see this like type of parity within the league. And then Middlebury to pick up a win last night over St. Lawrence. But I feel like that's enough on these for now, knowing how much we hit, you know, in the end with coach as well.
Yep. Yep. Good point there. All right. We'll keep this thing moving right along then. Good points there, Dan. And let's not go too far. We'll hit number one Salisbury as they took on CNU, which I thought was going to be a little bit of a tighter contest. Turned out not to be the case as Salisbury dominated a lot pretty early on. And won this thing here 18-12. As always, didn't catch too much of this one away this weekend. But Dan, explain to me how Salisbury kind of handled the CNU team so good. I mean, we've seen them roll quite a bit early on into the year, but struggled a little bit here. So what were the keys to success?
Yeah, I appreciate you setting the table here for this one. I don't know that I agree with every word you said in the process of doing so, but I love Fair. You, so I won't pick a fight with everything. You asked like how did it happen? I will ask you to think back to a lot of the Salisbury CNU or excuse me, Salisbury York games that we were on the wrong end of in some of those years. It felt similar to that where it was like loose balls, like go to the bigger, stronger team. They got those. You know, like they shoot the ball harder, they shoot the ball better, like they just like do all those types of things that like gosh, that just bleeds the life out of their opponents from time to time, you know, and I think that happened in this one as well. It starts well with the CNU goal, you know, they go up 1-0, but then that turns into a 6-1 lead by the end of, you know, at some point within the first quarter. It ends up at 6-2 or 6-3, I think, by the official end of the first quarter, but Salisbury goes up 6-1. Relatively quickly and goes on a 6-goal run within the first quarter. And again, it's just like, it's a lot of, you know, what has happened in the situations when Salisbury has beaten CNU in the past. And honestly, like we've said, I think really early on, we were super high on CNU. And you said they were rolling a little bit early. And then recently, and even in the last like a couple of rankings, like they've slowly dropped, specifically since that St. Lawrence loss. And then they lost to Williams. Now they lost here in this fashion. You know, I think it's just a situation where they're not quite as talented as they've been in the past. I think in when we think of Andrew Cook, we still think of, you know, a couple of years ago Cook that was like, you know, reminiscent of LeBron. Once he would get going downhill, it was like, all right, you might as well just start to like get underneath of the hoop for a an inbounds going the other way. You know, like you're not stopping LeBron once he would get downhill. And like Cook had like a little bit of that feel. It feels like a crazy exit, like, you know, exaggeration. There was a little bit of that. Like once he got going downhill, it was look out. And like, we don't see much of that. And Salisbury does such a good job of like, obviously taking him out. Like they shut him as much as possible. And it's hard to get to because CNU is smart. So they put him in, you know, some different situations, put him at attack, let him pick the ball up on restarts. Like there's certain ways, you know, you have to get the ball into a stick certain somehow. And when that happens, like Salisbury is just so dialed and detailed and like all the way through, they always know where he is. The plan is in place. And it's like, you know, if Salisbury is going to lose to CNU, it's going to be somebody else that does it. And, you know, we just continue to see that that doesn't happen.
Yep. Yep. Time after time there, the Gauls just seem to really just take ownership of this matchup quite a bit here, and really of this season. What if they're undefeated now, 9 straight weeks at number one spot, like
entered at number one in the preseason.
Yeah,
and continued to stay there.
Recent memory, has that happened?
If you came on here and was like you had like a really like well put together argument on why they shouldn't be and was arguing strength of schedule and like the fact that RPI has, you know, a really good win over RIT and is also undefeated, and that win over RIT is a better win than Salisbury has in their belt, like be a decent argument.
You might have hinted at a big dog's big take there. It's okay.
Maybe it put wasn't it on the freaking outline.
It wasn't on the outline. You would have never known.
Goofball.
Yeah. I'm silly like that. But anything else you want to say about these two teams here?
They'll play each other again.
Yep.
Coach Thompson, as many bad things as I just said about CNU, I could say good things about, you know, there is talent on that team. Defensively, they have, you know, certainly a few guys that really bring it every single game. They have talent in the goal. I don't know that Hanway's been playing his best, but I don't think
we did get to see Declan. Shout out Declan.
That's your boy.
Yep.
I know you're excited to cheer him on for the next couple of years after this, but I don't know that he's playing his best. I don't know that he would say he's playing his best, but we've seen him, you know, do really well down the stretch. So there's an element of like, you know, that is in him. Can that come out down the stretch? You know, all of that, you could say that exact same thing about Cook. Right. Like maybe that element of everything we just said gets a little bit more unleashed here. Maybe he's, you know, banged up a little bit and we don't know it. If he can get some rest, get healthy a little bit, you know, maybe that all helps. And Coach Thompson's going to have something, you know, like we keep saying it's been a lot of the same thing in terms of like, you know, the impact and the effect. But obviously, like, there is more going on behind the scenes than anything meets the eye within those 60 minutes of, you know, those games. And perhaps, like, if it comes to beating these guys, like, you hold something in the holster knowing that you're likely to see them here and again in a few weeks.
Yep. Yep, good point. And it's just, that's a scary thought to think about, Dan. Like, I feel like just a couple weeks ago, we were like, oh, yes, the season is underway. Everything's good to go. And now we're talking about, like, man, a couple weeks from now, we're talking conference tournament, conference playoffs.
Definitely, definitely.
It's just how the season goes, man, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it comes and goes in a snap. It always happens that way. You get rolling into your Saturday, Wednesday schedule in the beginning of the season. And then the next thing you know, you're like halfway through your conference schedule. And, you know, you're looking ahead towards what you need to be doing to win some games in the playoffs.
It's nuts. It's nuts. But I digress. We'll keep moving here. We'll head over to Swarthmore versus Gettysburg, as this one was interesting. I probably would have picked Gettysburg before the weekend if we were just chatting about it.
I know you would have.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, those freshmen are just
Chase
so
Morgan,
powerful.
Freshman Stan. Yeah, your diaper sniper.
You know, Swarthmore does take the cake here. And I believe this is the fourth time Swarthmore has won this matchup
in a row.
So, you know, I guess at this point, it's Swarthmore's to lose every year for the most part. Doesn't matter who's playing or anything like that. But Dan, break it down for me. How did Swarthmore get this victory?
Yeah, I mean, like we said, there's really is an element of like, there's a game plan that goes into it. Like there seems to be some sort of methodology, you know, that Swarthmore just has down pat. I think a piece of that, that obviously like, you know, you want to get in any game, but definitely was a huge factor in this one was face-off play. So did you happen to see the discrepancy in this, face-off year battle?
I saw it was something crazy. Martinez went 11 for 12 and McHenry went 13 for 14. So what are we looking at there? Like 26 face-offs, 24
for 26 day for Swarthmore. So that's like,
that's
you know, that's a game changer. That's game, absolutely game shifting. And Gettysburg, it's not like they, you know, just kept throwing out one guy. Like they put four different guys out there to take draws on the day. So like they were attempting different things. It seemed like, you know, for most of the game that obviously like there was a Swarthmore lean, but Gettysburg was kind of at least within shouting distance for the bulk of the game. And then a third quarter run that really kind of extends it. And you never really get the sense that Gettysburg is ever going to win the game from basically any point within the second half. But there's so much interesting to like so many interesting aspects of this. One of them I think is just the overall like Swarthmore offense and like swagger that they play with, I think is the way that I would describe it. And it always just feels heightened within this matchup specifically.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point that I feel like the boys always get up for this one. And this is kind of crazy analogy here possibly, but like almost like Raven Steelers type vibes. Like both of these teams don't like each other, giving the edge to Swarthmore quite a bit here, but you know, they battle back and forth and it's ground and pound. You think that's off base there?
No. I think Swarthmore, like, definitely, like, Swarthmore gets way up for this game. They get up for Dickinson as well, which is a really fun matchup coming up and is, you know, a rematch of last year's conference championship. But they definitely get up for Gettysburg as well. Like, it's just extra heightened, it seems. But more than that, like, it's not just a matchup thing, but like they're just dialed with the details, you know, like RIT when they played Tufts earlier this year was dialed with the details. And part of it was, you know, they're comfortable with the team. They're familiar with the opponent. Like they see him pretty familiar. Like they see him pretty commonly or frequently. And Swarthmore, obviously with Gettysburg, you have the same element of that where like there's all of that that goes into it. And it's kind of like, and I used this expression for Tufts as well, but like if you study one year for like really, really hard test, and then the very next year, like you have to take that exact same test again, and maybe it's less prep time, but the test is easier. Like, you're in good shape to go ahead and, like, be successful in that, you know?
True, true. I see where your head's at there.
So I kind of feel like that is how it is with Tufts in this year specifically. And I think that kind of, like, same concept applies this year to Swarthmore and Gettysburg, where it's, like, every year they prepare for, you know, Gettysburg, and they have, you know, a plan in place for their long, aggressive defenders that so often give so many teams trouble. But Swarthmore attackmen are, like, poised and handle that pressure and, you know, can go by it and make them pay for it.
Yeah. And that's how you got to beat that kind of pressure there. So love it. Good deal. Anything else on this game before we keep on moving?
A couple individual just quick shout outs, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so I think, again, just to stick specifically on the offensive side of the ball, you already mentioned those face-off guys that were huge. But Clay Almgren, 5 points on the day, obviously was huge just with that type of production. But more importantly, like, I think he plays with, like, a pretty impressive efficiency in terms of, like, his shooting. And, you know, 5 points on just 7 shots and 2 turnovers. But I think in times that we've seen his game in the past, like, there's been a little bit of, like, ebbs and flows to it. Whereas, like, today or in this game, in this matchup, like, I thought that every touch was, like, a really strong balance of, like, dangerous but controlled and, you know, within the frame of the offense and not kind of just, like, straying.
Love that. That's a good point. And did we have any, like, impressive feats in the goal at all for this one?
What?
I heard a possibility that a Drew Tyson could have been a game-changing factor in this one.
Feats in the goal. Got it. Feats I did in not... the goal. Got it. Yeah, you know, 15 saves from Drew Tyson, which in a game like that, obviously, is huge. So, yeah, really impressive there. From Drew and dictating the game and leading the tempo of the defense and picking up that type of a win is, you know, just as important as the overall, like, arching stat of 15 saves.
Yeah. Agreed. Cool. All right. We will keep on going then. And let's go to, I feel bad for saying this, but I feel like this is just, time after time, Lynchburg loses another close one to number 10 Washington in the lead, 10-9. Definitely great game here. I mean, was it pretty back and forth here, Dan? I would expect kind of a tight one, which obviously we got here. But, you know, I kind of expected the Hornets to pull this one off. If I'd be completely honest here, I feel like they've been playing good lately. They keep losing the tight ones. I thought that they'd probably be turning a corner here pretty soon, but doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah. So this one was, really fun for multiple reasons. One, like, it was a great game. They go back and forth plenty. Lynchburg gets some scoring from some uncharacteristic, spots where, like, you're not expecting them to score and, you know, they do, but also it was at 7 o'clock. So it was, like, the only game that was really, like, dominating the slate at that point. So I really, like, got to, you know, watch it all live, and that was fun. Not always do I get to just kind of own in on one game as it's happening. Plenty on, like, go back and watch and catch the film and, like, kind of zoom in on it. But at that point, I already know the result. Plenty of times, like, I'm watching games live, but during the day where, like, there's a bunch of games going on. It's also why I love the midweek games, is usually it's just, like, one or two games that you can kind of narrow in on. But in this instance, when, you know, it's the nightcap amongst, you know, a great day of action, and then it's, you know, the only one that's kind of dominating the slate, you get all the attention on it. And I loved every second of it. It was an awesome game. You would have loved it because it was, like, the whole Lynchburg element of, like, you know, all the students are out and, you know, bringing the couches out onto the track.
That's literally one of my favorite aspects. Yep. Absolutely love that.
They get, you know, all that, like, environment going. So You know, the whole thing, it makes for an awesome game. But yeah, I guess that was kind of the overall arching theme of it. A back and forth game in an awesome environment at home under the lights for Lynchburg. Ultimately they drop and it lets WNL do the whole like waving to the crowd thing. And like, it was just an awesome game.
Love it. Love it. So particularly in that, who were the standouts? Did you have any big hitters here on the stat sheet?
Yeah, so Michael Hott was huge, especially down the stretch. He has a bunch of assists and then scores the game winner. So just a huge day. And like I said, he has 4 points, and all of them come pretty late in the game, like deep in the third and then 3 points in the fourth quarter, and including the game winner. So like, that's as clutch as it gets, just a really big-time play out of him. We didn't see a whole ton of production out of Hillis Burns, whereas, like, you know, all season we've kind of keyed in on him. I think James Haley is a guy that we've been slow on talking about enough. He's been spectacular on the season, and was spectacular in this game. He entered it with 11 points going into it and then tacked on, you know, obviously a few more. I think he's really two-handed and skilled and slick and does – you know, everything that we talk about in terms of like giving an offense, you know, a key guy that can kind of go by you and win a matchup off the end line. And, you know, that type of like, you know, identity shaping type of player. And he's very two handed, which is, you know, hopefully all D3 pod listeners, make sure you go follow Big Dog and Caleb, Big Dog and Cap on Twitter. I'm not Caleb. But like, I put two clips up of him side by side, one of them splitting, taking the left, taking his left hand, getting up the hash and scoring. And then another one side by side of him, then doing the opposite, getting to his right hand, coming up the hash and scoring that way. So like, just gives the offense a ton of identity. And he, again, was good in this one. And Leif Smith also had 3 points on the day as well.
All-star name there. All right. Yep. Good rundown there with WNL. I will keep us moving right along here. And let's stop right in Ursinus, where we had an overtime thriller, which saw Ursinus beat Haverford. Dan, what did I miss out of this one?
So this is one that I didn't watch all of, but yes. Sorry, let's redo that.
Okay.
Just say that one happened, and we'll move on to.
Okay, should I go?
Don't ask what happened. Say what do you got, so okay. I can say nothing, yep. Or like, you know.
Yep. Perfect. Okay. All right. Ready?
Yep.
3, 2, 1. All right, yeah, that was a good recap there of the WNL win. Let's keep this thing moving. I'll take us right to Ursinus, where we saw an OT thriller and Ursinus beating Haverford. Dan, what do you got on this one?
I did not digest this one, but I did am aware that happened. Yes, Haverford OT winner.
Okay, love that.
Ursinus OT winner.
OT winner. Yep. I mean, off the top, I just see Jonathan Singer, 20 saves. So, no, it's got to be a thriller. We'll definitely have to go back and maybe digest that one together.
All right.
Would love that. All right. We'll keep on going then. And we'll get to Union, where they get back on track and beat Ithaca 17-12. Did you catch much of this, Dan?
A little bit. So just mostly watching for Union pieces and bits, and was really impressed with Peter Kipp, who, you know, does a lot of initiating, and I feel like he's kind of getting better and better and better, kind of adding to the post up. Like, I feel like he's always done a good job of kind of like seeing through the defense and reading the defense and playing with the setup, and he just continues to do a good job of that.
Yeah, he's a name we've said for quite a few years now, so definitely one that to make note of. And then last thing I really got here, Dan, I know it's not a team we talk about a ton, but UMass Boston, I know this clip went viral on Twitter and everything. I saw it sitting at the bachelor party. The last second goal. Did you see that? I know you were tagged in it, so obviously you saw it, but what'd you think about that?
Yeah, it's insane. It's one of the craziest game winners that I can really ever recall. And for those who haven't seen it, like, make sure you try and track this thing down. You can find it's on IL's Instagram and Twitters and all of that type of stuff. But it's an end line restart with 0.8 seconds left on the clock. And the attackman picks it up and goes. And I don't know if he's trying to jam the crease or what, but just basically shoots it from the end line. And it bounces off the goalie's, like, side, hip, back sort of thing and banks off of the goalie into the goal. It's one of the craziest game winners you'll ever see. The attackman, maybe he does it on purpose. I don't know. It's kind of like
it almost seemed like he did it on purpose. Effort.
It seems like it. And knowing how much time is on the clock, like maybe it worked out great. The goalie is kind of like scrambling to get back in the goal. I don't know. It's possible. But man, it was such an awesome sequence there. Obviously not for Maritime, but it was an awesome sequence there for lacrosse fans in general.
Yep. Loved it. Yep. Good weekend all around. I think that's a good summary there of the weekend. I do want to get into some weekend preview before we get to coach though. So without further ado, you want to get into some preview?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Big dog, big watch.
Big watch. Yep, there's some big watches this weekend. But I think my biggest one's got to be Dickinson Swarthmore. You know, two really hot teams going at it. Swarthmore off the big win with Gettysburg. Dickinson's been red hot all year. I think this is going to be a true battle. And you alluded to it too. You know, this is one where Swarthmore has kind of got circled on the calendar. They feel more comfortable with what Dickinson's able to throw at them. So I think it's going to be a true test, real one goal game type deal. You know, real tough battle.
And Dickinson has had like its fair share of, you know, just issues in terms of consistency, I think is the way I would put it. Where we've seen some high highs from Dickinson and some low lows. So it's a situation, like you said, you know, maybe that's really close. Maybe not. You know, we've seen Dickinson own this battle in the past. If they rolled, would it be shocking? Maybe not. But again, you know, like Swarthmore's trajectory and Dickinson's inconsistency, like, I mean, one goal game, like I could see Swarthmore if they play the same way with the same poise, like, you know, I could see them doing well in this game as well, especially considering, you know, like one of the things that I think is impacting Dickinson's inconsistency has been a spot where coming into the season, we had given them a ton of credit at the faceoff X where, you know, and they're doing a bit better as of late, but you know, if Swarthmore is able to own the X the same way, you know, we could be looking at, you know, quite the interesting case in the Centennial Conference.
Yep. Agreed. This is going to be a very fun one. Got it circled on my calendar for Saturday there. But another one I want to touch base on here is going to be Tufts Middlebury. Very interesting with Tufts losing the Wesleyan game. And, you know, Middlebury kind of jumping back onto the right track. They did get that win there. So, you know, this is going to be a real tough battle, Dan. I before this game, I definitely would have said Tufts has the clear full-on advantage. I still think they do have the advantage, but I think, you know, it could come down to a tough battle.
So it's one of those things where, like, does Middlebury draw confidence that like propels them, or do they create complacency based off of today's win, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And you know, all the ups and the downs of the year this year, it feels like it could slightly be the latter, but we talk about it. Tufts week is different in the NESCAC. When they play Tufts, like, they have a target on their back. Every team wants a piece of them. So I think they're going to be geared up, ready to go, and I think they're going to get the best version of the Panthers.
And it's also interesting, like, a lot of these guys that are on this team were young cats on that 2022 team that went and beat Tufts. So they kind of have this, like, you know, there's a chance that, like, they're looking back on that time being like, you know, we've done this before, we can do it again. And they have, like, an element of confidence after that loss, after that win, you know, on Tuesday, to then go into this game with Tufts with a little extra, like, you know, confidence, but also seeing that, you know, the Cardinals perhaps put some blood in the water.
Yep. Very well said. It's going to be a tough one. I don't know. I between that and Dickinson Swarthmore, you know, definite game of the week category for me. But definitely going to be one I'm going to be watching. Another one I'm going to be keeping tabs on, though.
Just to make one more point on Dick Swat. I think Swarthmore's, like, element of last year is important. I think the fact of, like, building on an NCAA tournament appearance and building on a Centennial Conference championship appearance to then come back and, like, perform better in those situations with a lot of guys that were in those roles the year before is, like, a really important kind of dynamic to just keep in mind, and something I had in my notes that I felt was worth a quick backtrack to.
Yeah, no, you're passionate about it. You got to say it, man.
Sorry, brother. I did the prep to put it in the notes. Like, if I wrote it out in the notes with my hands, like, you know, if it made that type of status of a note, then it deserves some shine in the real world, you know?
Agreed. Yep. 100%. Yeah. But now we'll keep it moving to another good one here. Union RPI, you know, RPI 12-0, putting the undefeated streak on the test. I might talk about it a little bit later, but, you know, one or two for them for as far as the ranking. This is going to be a real tough test for Union here, but they've been playing pretty well here. Don't put Union, the Dutchman. Yep. Don't put the Dutchman out just yet.
Not the Dutchman anymore.
Dang it. Oh, anymore. Did that change recently?
Just as you got used to it. Sorry.
Oh, of course.
Over the all season.
You can't change these things up on me, man.
Yeah, over the offseason, they changed, and you won't get what they changed to in a billion guesses.
Oh, no. What is it?
The Garnet Chargers.
Oh, what? What is a Garnet? We've talked about what a Garnet is, but I'm imagining, like, an electrified version of
Swarthmore that. Swarthmore is the Garnet, which is where we've gotten that conversation from. But Garnet Charger? I think it's a device that charges Swarthmore.
Oh, okay.
Ooh.
Oh, interesting. I was thinking more of, like, you know, Pokemon, like Zapdos.
Yep.
That's what I envisioned when I hear Garnet Charger.
Yeah, it's a red Zapdos.
Red Zapdos. Yep, exactly.
All right, we're getting off track. It's officially
enough red Zapdos.
It's officially getting close to midnight, so keep us moving here.
Yep. We'll get off Red Zapdos. Dan, what do you think for this Union RPI contest?
I'm very excited for it. They don't particularly like each other, these teams. I mean, you can basically get to say that. You can kind of copy-paste that sentence to almost every matchup in, like, conference realm area, but I think that definitely applies for Union RPI. I think they're two teams that both are going to, like, I don't know. This is one that anybody who's going to try and pick up a ground ball on this one, like, you better make sure you're, like, you know, your chin strap is buckled and you have a little head on your swivel. Just knowing that there's going to be a little extra physicality coming from both sides. And You know, the game is heightened. It's a top 10 battle. It's an in-conference battle. You have all sorts of like seeding and alignment on the lines, you know, and pride on top of all of everything that I just said. So yes, very excited for Union RPI out of the Liberty League.
Yep. Yep. Going to be an awesome contest. Then we got a double feature this weekend for Bowdoin. On Saturday, they're going to be taking on Williams. And then Sunday, they're going right back to it and taking on Amherst, which those two games back-to-back is not going to be easy at all. So props to them for scheduling it, but interested to see how it's going to play out. And this is definitely two big ones that they're going to want to have here, Dan. Wouldn't you agree?
I would, except you, again, adequate job setting the table, not particularly great, though.
Okay.
It's not back-to-back. This is going to be Saturday and Monday.
Oh, okay. All right. That's pretty darn close.
And the Monday game is a reschedule from earlier in the year, so they didn't schedule it this way.
So no props to them for scheduling it this way.
Correct. But again, very adequate job of setting the table there, partner.
Thank you. They
do play back-to-back games against those opponents, and it is very interesting. It's also part of a stretch where Bowdoin has Williams, Amherst, Wesleyan, and Tufts left.
That's a stretch.
That's the gauntlet. And that's leading into then NESCAC playoffs, right? So, like, it's really interesting to see how that right there alone, like, there's so much, like, strategy that's going to go into that. How do you keep your guys healthy, fresh, playing their best, you know, through that stretch, in that stretch, and then beyond that stretch, without tilting and showing everything that you got, you know, because you don't want to do that either. So how can you be building and getting better while also beating those teams? And you can't take anything for granted because you have to beat them, you know, to be giving yourselves the best chance for, you know, alignment, seeding, everything that we just talked about. So that is a, you know, just story within the story of the season for Bowdoin right now. And I guess a story within the ultimate story of the season for D3 fans.
Yep. And we are all the beneficiaries of that story.
Damn right.
So,
You get to that, they have Colby, who we'd be remiss to talk this much about the NESCAC and not talk about Colby, especially on the heels of Middlebury, who, you know, we've just said all these good things about. Middlebury, Colby was a 7-5 game last week. So, you know, an eye-catching kind of result that made you just do an extra bit of, you know, hey, what's going on here in Panther country? And part of what landed them on the downward trajectory in this week's Inside the Cross rankings while still being in the top 20, but deemed a downward trajectory team that then told me to shut it and shove it right back where the sun don't shine while they beat St. Lawrence today in a top 5 win. So it's a fun time to be a D3 lacrosse fan. For sure.
Man, love it. And this is one of the few years, man, where I really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you got a couple undefeated teams. You got all these teams just beating the crap out of each other. It's
crazy.
You have
Salisbury at the top, but, like, you know, they're awesome. They're so good. Are they going to be, you know, battle tested as the rest of these teams down the stretch? Does that matter? You know, does it just being healthy and, you know, prepared more important than that? You know, like, there's all of those types of questions that I think are making the season, you know, fun.
Yep. Yep. Love it. All right. So you want to get into a little bet of the week?
You got one?
Yo, I got a little one cooking. I know I crushed it last week with taking Wesley at 3.5.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Loved me some Wesley and I smashed that.
That was Wesleyan Middlebury, not Wesleyan Tufts.
Yeah, no, that was 2 weeks ago. Sorry, 2 weeks ago. Last time we did a bet of the week.
And you picked Wesleyan to win.
Win by 3.5.
And they lost 15-8.
Well, that didn't go in my favor, did it? whoops.
My notes have you as really bad at D3 bets of the week this season. So your notes having you as good in winning in D3 bets seems an oversight on someone's
part. Conflicting notes. I'll have to go back to the stats and check it out. Yeah. But I do have a little bet of the week for you if you're interested.
I am, and I'm prepared to. You set the line, and if it's a shitty line, I'll tell you.
Okay. All right. All right. Fair enough. I got to pick Dickens and Swarthmore. Game of the week for me. Give me 2.5.
2.5.
Minus 2.5 for Dickinson.
So does Dickinson win by more than 2.5?
Yep.
I'll take Swarthmore. It's more fun.
Oh, okay.
Dickinson consistency issues.
You don't Where's know what game? Team you're going to get.
Where's the game?
Good question.
Thank you.
Game is in. Going to my calendar there. It's handy dandy.
I think Swarthmore likes to defend home turf.
Dickinson at Swarthmore.
Yes. All in my favor of what I just said, right?
Dang it.
I think Dickinson, yep. I think Swarthmore likes to defend home turf.
Okay. Okay, Dickinson, fair enough.
Dickinson with some injuries, being banged up, you know, this is the time of year that all that type of stuff happens. I don't notice anything like that big time with Swarthmore. So.
All right. Well, I hope for your sake you're correct. I hope for your sake, but well, I think we'll see the Red Devils run here.
All right. There it is. Locked in. I'm rolling with the Garnet, not their Chargers. Anything else? You got a big dog big take?
I do have a little bit of a big dog big take if you want to hear it.
I do.
All right. I alluded to it.
Does this have anything to do with Salisbury?
It sure does. All right, I can't get changing out of the this big to dog, the big dog. Big
we're just changing this to the big dog seagull segment. Big dog seagull segment.
The seagull segment brought to you by the big dog here. But this week's seagull segment has me thinking that Salisbury needs to be ranked number 2. And I know it's scary for, you know, people who create the poll and everything like that. They've been number 1 all year and they've done absolutely nothing to show you that they shouldn't be number 1. But the strength of schedule just isn't there for them. And RPI, obviously, I think has the stronger strength of schedule. I know they've won some closer games against some inferior opponents. They've let some people sneak in. They've won a couple that they had no business winning. But, you know, that's what good teams do. They find ways to win against, you know, any team possible. And if you look at strength of schedule, I mean, RPI's is way higher than Salisbury. So you factor that in. They're both 12-0. I think you got to go RPI at number 1.
So, neutral site, big dog, big field, in the middle of nowhere, Salisbury and RPI show up on it and play. Best crew in the world, so no officiating is an issue. Robot officials. Yep. On a neutral site, who wins?
I mean, I can't bet against Joe Perry. Give me RPI on this one. I really think it might.
The real
come down
answer
to home.
Is how long does Salisbury have to prepare? Because if you give him like more than 3.5 days, if you give Coach Berkman more than 76 hours, and
it's
you don't
over,
expect
you don't...
Perry, you're picking against. Know. You're picking against a lot of history.
True. True. But I don't know. There's just something special about the squad this year. I don't know what it is. There's something special about the boys. I think they pull it off.
I like your take because I like the premise of it. Period. I think that's my rebuttal is I like your take because I like the premise, but I still think that like they came in as one. They've been one. They haven't shown anything otherwise. They've dominated what's been in their path. It'd be hard to move them off of it.
Bless you.
Thank you. All right. Anything else?
I think that's about it there, Dan.
All right. Great up. We obviously have it continuing into a fantastic interview. A lot of NESCAC talk in this episode that kind of pairs really well with it. And then we will turn it over officially to ourselves and let the world get on with the rest of the D3 pod.
All right. Love y'all.
Peace. All right, D3. thanks so much for tuning in. Like we said, we have a really special guest here, Coach John Raba of Wesleyan. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing great, Dan. I appreciate you having me on. It's awesome. Great to be with you guys.
Absolutely. And Caleb and I already talked a little bit about it, but you and I have a bit of a relationship dating back a few years here, mostly to Jack's time as an intern with Inside Lacrosse. And, you know, really thankful for our relationship through the years and always being able to lean on you for some insight. And this, I believe, is the first official appearance for you on the pod, correct?
It is. I hit the big time finally.
Perfect. Yes, that's exactly what it was. We were waiting for you to exactly do that. The national championship in 2019 wasn't good enough for our standards. We were still waiting for that. But I mentioned that because for those who don't know, Jack actually had Caleb's role before Caleb had Caleb's role.
Yeah, he was definitely, I know he's very appreciative of that opportunity that you kind of took as a young man. And that relationship, still one of his best memories in terms of working for Inside Lacrosse is with you. And you'd always tell me how great Dan Kaplan was to him. And the D3 talk was just constant. And he was pretty fired up just being part of that whole thing and just as hanging on. Just you were kind of guiding the ship and he was just hanging on for dear life. And I appreciate that opportunity.
No, he had the voice and the insight of a coach with all of the analysis that he was bringing that year. So we appreciated him then, and now we get to watch him flourish on the field, which is the more important part. He's got plenty of time to get a microphone in his face once he's old and washed up, but it's exciting to see him now, obviously, on the field. And Caleb, I know, has a big question here stored up for you along those lines. But before we get into it, I'm going to take us away from the lacrosse field for a second. But as you know, you guys know, and hopefully listeners here, my wife and I are now within the month range of our due date. So we are really closing in here. I need some fatherly advice. What do you got for me?
Hang on, man. Hang on and just, do everything in your power to make your wife as comfortable as possible for the next couple of years. Because again, she's going to have a lot on her plate. And I think as much as you try to prepare for it, is this the first child right now, Dan?
Yep, that's right.
Well, as much as you try to prepare, you're never going to be ready. So it's okay. You're going to figure it out. And just kind of go with the flow, whatever your wife needs. You're just the wingman. And if you do that, usually you can't go wrong. So I'm excited for you. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, we are really excited. And I will now officially turn it over to Caleb and let us get all the way in to the nitty gritty of the good lacrosse talk.
All right. So, Coach, along those lines, I know it must be some an interesting dynamic being able to coach Jack. Were you able to coach him through youth sports at all, or is this the first chance you've been able to get with him?
Yeah, fortunately, I've been with him since fourth grade, basically. So all the way through his middle school years, and we did actually we had a club team that we had from ran through Wesleyan, the Cardinals lacrosse. So we had a pretty legit team we put together for a couple of years, and starring running Jacoby on that team as well. That was pretty good that we got to work with these guys as younger players, and so I was fortunate to have that experience with him through the years. And so I thought it was really good that he had a different experience going to college and really testing the waters with the Division I and going to Loyola, which he absolutely loved. But fortunate with the situation with COVID that, we had this kind of this chance to kind of revisit, maybe, thinking about, coming to Wesleyan and having that experience too, and seeing how some of his friends were doing at the Division III level. And really fortunate to kind of in that second phase of coaching him now, to be working with him. So yeah, I've been fortunate to have that little piece already and excited to the next year.
Yeah, definitely. And 29 assists on the year. He's been absolutely dominated. Kind of like the straw that stirs the drink, I'd say, when I watch the offense go. Objectively taking him, being your son, out of it. What does he kind of bring to the offense in that group?
Yeah, Jack is definitely a pretty cerebral player. He's the one that definitely makes things click and is the quarterback back there. We trust him a lot with the ball and the stick and to make good decisions. And he's a very conscientious passer, which I'm really appreciative of. That's something I preach all the time. And to not only Jack, to the entire team, that, you know, the importance of delivering a good pass and with a good decision is the key, right? If you want to be really efficient on offense, you better have some players that can really, you know, make things happen. So he's always been, you know, in that role and really been, even if it's two passes away, again, just as happy for him to do that, because he's making good offense work for us at Wesleyan. So, you know, he's been a big piece for the equation for us, and we're excited, obviously, to have him with us.
And D3 listeners or D3 pod listeners for the past few years will hopefully realize that on this side of April, we get to start using some more advanced analytics, because we have enough results to kind of draw in, and for Mr. Patrick McEwen, aka Mr. Lax Film Room, to go and, you know, do all his formulas and be like, here's some statistics that say these teams are the best at these things. One of those statistics, adjusted offense, has Wesleyan as the number one team in the country. I think, obviously, we've talked about Jack. One of the elements that makes that offense so lethal to me is midfield play. Can you talk a little bit about those guys and, you know, just how lethal they've been?
Yeah, I think we have a lot of weapons. You know, obviously, you know, starts with a couple of our seniors, DJ Dixon, who's just, you know, again, he's a force. He's a 6'3", 215-pound midfielder that can, if you watch the Tufts game, he gets really hard to stop him once he gets going to the cage. And then, you know, you got a shooter like CK Giancola, who really, you know, again, if he gets his spot up and his hands free, it's really, really been tough to stop him. Just smart IQ, really slick with the ball in his stick. And then on the other side, you know, you got a hybrid kid like Benny Burns, who kind of plays in the upper left. So we're kind of hitting you in all different places. You know, obviously we've got the X-Man who can feed it inside and really distribute the ball. We've got both wings kind of covered, and you got a guy like DJ, you know, and you got Justin Hazard inside, who's a senior. He's in the all-time top 10 scoring list. He just broke into that, you know, a fifth-year senior who's floating around there. And then James Bailey is also, you know, just kind of the guy that really facilitates a lot between DJ and CK up top. He's got a ton of assists this year too. So we've got a lot of nice pieces that are really working together. And again, we're unselfish as a group, which is huge. To me, it's all about assisted goals and getting, not letting goalies lock on balls. It just makes one of those things that we can keep it hot, you know, and then work for our shots. We're going to be pretty good shape. So we're fortunate to have a senior group who've been around for a while, they've got some good experience and really have a little bit of a chip on our shoulder based on last year and the way it ended for us. So we're on a pretty good track and it's been a good couple of weeks for us for sure.
Love that. Yeah, that's a good summary there, but a lot of offensive talk for me. I want to shift it a little bit to the defensive end. That's where my heart lies there. And when I look at the defense, especially the past two games, Connor Selfridge has kind of boisted himself up and gained that starting role, at least over the past two games here. And, you know, and they've been two really big games where he's come in clutch quite a bit. Talk about kind of what he brings to the defense and what you've kind of seen in him to have him start for the past two games.
Yeah, Caleb, I know you love the goalie talk, so this is a good segue here. And Connor's been great for us. You know, we kind of thrust him into that starting role for the Amherst game, which is tough. It's a tough game to start for a Little Three Championship. We're asking him to step up and play, but we had a lot of confidence in him, you know, in the practices and everything he's been doing on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, we felt like he can definitely get the job done. He's got a nice calmness to him. He's a pretty chill kid. He stays pretty, you know, he stays within himself and stays dialed in. And he was huge for us in the Tufts game. You know, in that fourth quarter, he made four huge saves in that when they were making a hard push for us and just really showed his great composure, clearing the ball. It had a lot of poise. You know, we Tufts could definitely put a lot of pressure on you at the end when they're scrambling around, putting a lot of 10-man rides on. And you could easily turn it over and it could turn ugly quick. And he definitely was able to kind of help us, you know, stay on the right path. So I'm super excited for Connor. I feel like we've got a couple of good goalies in the program that are ready to go if needed. But I think it's his job right now. And he's done a fantastic job over the last couple of months for sure. And he's excited for tomorrow for sure.
And along those lines, to kind of dive into that Tufts matchup, obviously successful here in this one. The last time coming out with a victory against them was in 2019. What do you think was the biggest difference in this year's game and matchup compared to some of the last ones that obviously didn't fall Wesleyan's way?
Yeah, I mean, we've always really had it really since 2018. You know, 2018, we want to beat them three times in a row, you know, in the one season, which is really tough to do. And then we got 2019, we kind of came back. We had that great win, you know, at home. Really, it's what's probably most impressive, again, is trying to beat them on the you know, at their place. They're really, really tough to beat up there. They haven't lost. I think it's 5 years since they kind of had their first conference loss. So we knew we had our hands full. They're a great team, great program with a lot of pride. So we just had to come out with a mental toughness and a focus that it was going to be, you know, a rock fight, basically. And we knew it was going to be a 60-minute kind of, you know, everything we got, you know, and have that composure and knowing that even if we went up, that they would punch back. We knew we felt like we could generate offense based on what we saw in film. We felt like we had some pretty good matchups. We feel pretty confident in our offensive group, but we also know they have a very potent offense. So when they did punch back, that we couldn't shy away, and our guys were stepped up, and there was that little kind of spurt there in the third quarter where they, you know, we were up and they came back and they went ahead and we came back. And so it was a back and forth thing, which you expected. So I give our guys a lot of credit. I'm really proud of them to be on the road and take those guys on. And it's great. And I think it has a lot to do with your experience in the past. You know, if you've got a team that's, you know, again, who's been through that and knows what it, you know, how it feels to lose those games and what it feels like now to win those games, it speaks volumes. So as a coach, we learned a lot from, you know, from our losses as much as our wins. And I'm really, you know, proud of the team for going up there and getting the job done. But that's, again, that was last week. So we got our hands full this week for sure.
And you mentioned composure. I feel like it's always something like coaches say, you know, you want your guys to play composed, but maybe parents and fans don't necessarily know how that manifests into, like, you know, actually being on the field. So when you say composure, like, what do you mean for Wesleyan to be composed? What is that kind of defined as?
Well, again, like in critical situations where, you know, you make a defensive stop, right? And then you maybe, you know, you're finding a short stick DBity kind of in the middle of the field. And instead of him trying to carry, you know, catch the ball and try to do everything himself, he's got guys surrounding him, you know, having that kind of, you know, wherewithal to kind of get your head up and really kind of scan the field and be a little bit more poised in the decision-making piece as it's all happening around you. That's to me is composure. Is like, you know, we made all those right plays. We cleared the ball really well. That's usually a big element with Tufts, is they're going to ride you. They're going to turn you back. And they're going to, you know, they're going to get generate a lot of offense based on that. So when I say composure, it's just like handling those tense situations. And then it's great when you have a kid like, you know, DJ Dixon that you can bring out of the box down to pick up a ball, and he's going to run a couple of those out, and it's good luck, you know, and it creates some pretty good offense for you. So there's those types of situations. There was a good balance between, you know, head up, making good decisions, and also, hey, we got to be an athlete here and just run this out and be aggressive. So that's what I mean in terms of that piece. And again, I think we handle that really well.
Love that. Yeah, so we talked about the NESCAC a little bit there, and you know how strong it is. You know, there's no real bye week or anything in the NESCAC like that. How does that help mold or shape your out-of-conference schedule a little bit?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of challenges that people don't really see with our out-of-conference, how hard it is to get games, right? Because we only have like we have a little window with our spring break where we can maybe get outside the region a little bit, and we're at the mercy of, like, hey, you know, we've reached out to so many teams from the South and trying to get teams, but, you know, teams are just booked up, so it's hard to get those top 10 matchups you want. We were really fortunate this year. We got Roanoke down in Maryland. They got to play them, and that was awesome for us and for Coach Pilot. We love those guys and what they do, and they have a great program. So, you know, but trying to get some of those games like the Stevens and the Roanoke, like, that just, again, adds to, you know, just getting you ready for kind of that. It's really, to me, it's about the NESCAC playoffs, right? Trying to get you ready. You're going through all these like rounds, and each game is so tough and challenging, but it's really preparing you for the NESCAC the playoffs that are coming up here in another few weeks, that we're trying to get really ready for. Because once you get through that, then you're really ready for the NCAAs if you could do pretty well. There's no doubt. So again, I think it's that's part of it, is just trying to, you know, as we go through each week, you know, trying to manage each game and understand, like, hey, it's the next one is the most important game. And we have a huge game with Trinity. They just beat up Hamilton, and Hamilton beat up Middlebury 2 weeks ago. It's like, you know, you start looking at all these scores, you're like, holy smokes, you don't know what to expect. We just know one thing. We got to be ready. We have to come out. Like midweek games, you just got to mentally, you got to dial in. It's going to, who wants it more? And that's what it's going to come down to.
Yep. I know Dan and I have been texting all week about the NESCAC, just how it's just a bloodbath, everyone kind of fighting it out there. So it is really a good test if you can get past that, you know, playoff where, you know, how far you can go. And that really is going to determine how well you're going to be poised up for the NCAA tournament. So, yep, love that there. Yeah.
And then along those lines, another in-conference battle here, I guess by the time people are listening to this tomorrow morning, it will be tomorrow night. So tonight there is a big Wesleyan versus Trinity game. Obviously, this is big for all of the reasons that we just said, but also Wesleyan had taken this 11 times in a row, and then Trinity ends the streak last year. So what are some keys and messages going into this one, you know, to right the ship here this year?
Yeah, I mean, I know, again, we have a lot of respect for Trinity, what Coach Torno does over there. They're a very well-coached team. They certainly have enough skilled players, and they're a very good program that you know, again, just had a great win against Hamilton. So for us, again, we don't take anything for granted. Like I said, it's a new year for us. We don't forget what happened to us last year. You know, we dropped a bunch of games towards the end of the season. And again, for different reasons, but we don't really care. We're not looking for any excuses. You know, we just need to make sure that we're ready to come out and really kind of assert ourselves this year. And again, it comes down to, hey, you want to win these games, you're going to have to step up on the defensive side, right? Goalies are going to have to make some saves. They're going to get their shots. They're going to take a ton of shots. And they're okay with that. They're comfortable with that. So Connor's going to have, you know, he's going to have to make his saves. And we have to capitalize, and we have to be efficient when we get the opportunities, right? That's the big thing is, you know, we're not just looking for us at Wesleyan. You know, we're not looking to just take shots or just volume shooting. It's the quality of shots. And I think that's something that's really separated us compared to last year. It's just our shooting percentage is just a lot higher, right? So we're really happy with the guys we have taking those shots, but the decisions and stuff that go behind those shots have been pretty significant for us. So that's going to be sticking the game plan and not kind of going outside of ourselves, regardless of how the game goes early on, because all these games comes down to the third and fourth quarter. So if we can kind of stick to what we do, you know, we feel good about that. But knowing we're going to have a, you know, real challenge on our hand is something that's definitely at the forefront.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I want to switch topics a little bit here. I did get a chance to play with someone on your coaching staff now, Kevin Witchie.
Oh yeah.
Awesome guy. Loved. I only got a year with him at York, but he was just such a great dude. Loved hanging out with him. Talk about kind of what he can bring to that defensive coaching staff.
The real question, you are on the right track with going this way. But the real way to ask this question is, how is Coach Witchie adjusting to coaching zone?
Yeah. So I definitely was an adjustment for Coach Witchie. He didn't know what the hell we were talking about when we first got here. But I think we've got him to buy in a little bit, you know, and this year a lot more comfortable with what we're talking about, our terminology. I think he also understands, particularly last year as his first, you know, like kind of as a college coach jumping in there, that, you know, things were coming at him fast and furious. And again, learning how to deal with just the student athletes, and you know, he was such a great player. So it didn't make sense. A lot of like why we couldn't do certain things, like, well, they're not you either, Kevin, you know, like, so again, he's helped us really develop a lot of really good young defenders over this last year. And it's been a key piece to, you know, our success. And every day just seeing him, you know, he's obviously owns a CrossFit gym now and doing really well. So he's into the fitness piece. So he, in the off season, he's controlled that, you know, our strength and conditioning component, which has been huge. And I think that's really going to help us too during the middle of the season when we're, you know, everybody's getting really skinny right now because maybe they're not in the weight room as much as they should be. Kevin's always been really one to kind of keep us ahead of the curve. So I'm excited to have him. He's definitely, like I said, he's bought into the zone. I know that firsthand because, you know, he's even questioned, like, why don't we jump into his zone a couple of times? Why don't we, you know, so, you know, he's converted a little bit on that end, and, you know, so excited to have him kind of, you know, part of it all.
Yeah, he is great. And I'll just bridge the gap a little bit for listeners who maybe are like, who the hell is Kevin Witchie? Kevin was the D3 player of the year, defensive player of the year in 2019, a York player that his freshman year aligned with Caleb and I's senior year playing, that then I had the privilege of coaching for 3 years after that. And he is every bit of what Coach just described, an animal. He's in a CrossFit gym. You know, at 4 or 5 in the morning every day, he's at practice. He's just doing, you know, all of the type of stuff that it takes to run and operate a small business while also coaching and being, you know, present in relationships in life as well. So he is an awesome dude, and we are thrilled to watch him flourish in this coaching role here at the D3 pod.
Awesome. Awesome guy.
But all right, so to keep us moving, and I'll take us right back to the Cardinals a little bit. Obviously, this isn't the 2019 team for an abundance of reasons, you know. Ronan Jacoby isn't dressing up for it. But, and again, like I was thinking of this, like, does this team have what it takes to win a national championship? Which, of course, you're going to say yes to. So I guess what my ultimate question is, like, what qualities do you see about this team that maybe that 2019 team also had that kind of, you know, you can draw a little bit of, you know, similarities from?
Yeah. So I'm going to go back. First of all, it's 2018. So I don't want to screw. I don't want to take Cabrini's win away from the 2019.
We don't need to take anything more away from them.
No, those poor guys. Yeah. So I got to make sure they have their due. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of, it is taking those hits during the season. You know, some setbacks that happened. I remember in 2018, you know, we had a really rough, you know, non-conference loss to Coast Guard, you know, who's a team that, you know, we really should beat by 15 goals, you know, and we had some setbacks in that year. But really dealing with some of that adversity throughout the course of the year, some key injuries throughout the course of the year. I feel like we were senior heavy that year, obviously. You know, that's another thing is when you had 17 seniors and a lot of them, you know, 7 All-Americans on that team. There's a lot of really great players, but, you know, there is some similarities there that some guys have been experienced. We have the key elements. I think we're still developing in certain areas. I like our short stick D mids. I love our long stick midi. It's a freshman, this kid Joe Hurton, who's an absolute beast. He's just, you see this kid out there, number 40. He's killing it right now. So there's definitely some elements that we're developing and are coming about as the season goes on. And then again, it's going to come down to some goalie, you know, All-American type goalie play, which is huge. Otto Bohan back then was amazing, you know, and that championship game, you know, to hold Salisbury to 6 goals is almost impossible. And he did. And so, like I said, that's the type of effort that needs to happen. And we'll see that happens over the next couple of weeks. It's kind of like it's coming quick, but it also feels like it's forever. We still have 5 more games. We have Trinity tomorrow. And so I'm really excited to see how, like, some of how this plays out over the next couple of weeks, because then you got that whole rigid, you know, I should say rugged NESCAC playoffs that are coming up too that you just have to deal with. And so that answer is hard to give right now. But I will say this, in 2018, it's not like I was sitting here in the middle of the season saying, this team has what it takes. This is a national championship team. I was just like, hey, we're like everyone else. We have an opportunity. If we play in a big game against any top 10 team, we feel like we have a chance to win. But, you know, we don't take it that we just didn't feel like we were just going to go murder people. Like, we totally, you know, we did it very businesslike and had probably the toughest path to a national championship of any team. I mean, when you think about the teams we played between, you know, obviously playing Tufts, Cortland, Cabrini, you know, your RIT, and then you're playing Salisbury in the national championship. That's 5 games that you're just like, holy smokes. That's a mentally tough team. So, and I think part of that is, you know, towards the end of that 2018 season, how we wound up handling those NESCAC playoffs. We had a setback in the finals in 2018, in the NESCAC final against Tufts, and we didn't let that define us. We basically came back stronger than ever, and we learned from it. So that's where I'm liking this team. Like, we had a setback with Stevens. We didn't play that well against Middlebury a couple of weeks ago, and we're learning from that. And so it set us up for a great week last week. So now, again, can we do that this week? We'll see. But we're excited for the challenge.
You mentioned that, like, resilience and bounce back and all that type of stuff. And I thought that that was, you know, really evident just in the last, you know, like you said, 10 days with obviously the week before not going exactly to plan, but then to come back and have, you know, the success that you did in the last 2 weeks is or last two games is, you know, obviously a really telling sign to the exact point that you were making there.
Right. Totally.
Yeah, so you've won some big games, as you just alluded to there. Is there any big, like, pregame ritual you do in the locker room or any big flags someone carries out? I know we had a flag at York that someone always ran out with, but you got any fun things like that to get the boys hyped up?
No. I mean, I'm in 28 years. I'm not that exciting to kind of, like, you know, the motivation or new Rocky speeches are kind of, like, it's just more business as usual. Just kind of just review the game plan. Like, it's really up to the players, right? All these great – anytime you have a great team at Wesleyan, I feel like it's player-driven. It's got to come from the upperclassmen, the seniors. They really have to want it. They have to get themselves ready on game day. You know, as coaches, our job, I feel like, is in practice, you know, trying to make sure that we're coaching them up. We're all on the same page. We're working out all the kinks, all the things that we may see, you know, especially in zone. Like, what are the looks we might get? What are the things that this team does that's maybe different from other teams? Like, we got to present all those opportunities in a very short window. And again, you know how it is in Division III. It's like, man, it's so fast, everything. So we don't have a week long like Division I has where they could just go over game plans and really it's pretty quick. So you do have to put, I would say, we do put a lot more of the focus on Wesleyan than we do on the opponent. So, again, we don't get caught up too much into now. Like, today was like, hey, this is what Trinity does, right? So we're focused a little bit on that. But really, everything else before then is, hey, this is the mistakes we made that we got to get better in, right, all the way up until this point. So we're used to that kind of pattern, and it's been good for our guys. And I think it kind of keeps them calm. And, again, I'm looking for consistency in our coaches. Like, so we're not – when things are going sideways, you know, we're not freaking out. We're all kind of handling that pressure well. Like, again, that's why, again, guys like Kevin Winchy are – pretty calming, you know, that he's very, it doesn't matter how big the goal is, or if you're down five goals, his mannerism is exactly the same. And that's great. It's been great for our staff. So it keeps our we have a very veteran staff too, you know, and it goes all the way from, you know, Coach McCarthy, who's 77 years old, to a young coach Moran, who's 24. So we have all kind of influences on our staff, from grandfatherly to fatherly to brotherly. You know, and I think it's pretty cool that our players get an opportunity to kind of pick from each one of those and hear different perspectives throughout the course of the year as we go through it. And, you know, again, I think that's the difference, I think, with Wesleyan, is we have that variety in our staff.
I love that. And I have an answer that or a question I think that kind of will have some shades to or some of those answers here in the holster along the recruiting lines. But before I get all the way into that, a question along the lines of schedule creation, which is something that, like, again, fans and players especially, like, they don't realize that their coach is also the guy that is, like, creating their schedule, but it's, like, 2 years in advance, and, like, they have no idea. And, like, you mentioned trying to get book dates with, like, some of those teams. Like, it's all so much more complicated than perhaps people realize. For you, what's the balance like, knowing that obviously you guys are going to go through the ringer in your conference and in your conference playoffs? Like, what's the balance of when you're trying to find that out-of-conference opponent of, you know, we want somebody who's going to challenge us and going to have us prepared for that, but we also don't want to, like, overburden our guys at the same time. Like, what's kind of your philosophy for that, and how does it kind of manifest for this year's schedule?
Yeah, and I think there's also another element, too. It's like, you know, you want to try to get some experience for these younger guys, too. Right. So, you again, at some point they have to play and they have to get some experience. So, again, you can't have all five non-conference teams be top 10 teams or top 20 teams. Again, so if we can have something where we're like, hey, three to top 20 teams and a couple of teams that are right on that next level, that's the best scenario. Again, does it always work like that? No. Some years it does. Sometimes you can get down to the, like, 2019, we were at that Mustang Classic. That was an awesome experience. And then, you know, that just automatically builds up your resume and everything else, gets you just prepared for, like, NESCAC play and gets you prepared for the NCAAs. So, again, when those opportunities do present themselves, we'll take those. It's challenging. We love to play teams from the South. The only thing I'll say about the teams from the South is they don't like to travel up to the North. So we have to do all the traveling all the time. We have to go down that way if we're going to play them. And we're fine with that. But Sometimes it's a little bit, again, tough because of break. It has to fall on breaks. So, but we'll continue to work on that. And it's not getting easier because, like you said, head coaches at Division III level is we're schedulers. We're ordering all the food. We're the ops person. We're the film uploaders. We're just everything you can possibly think of. We're wearing every single hat. And we're trying to figure all that out and what's best for your program. So I think we've done a good job of it over the years. It's not a perfect science, but I feel like there's a good balance in our scheduling. And again, once you get into NESCAC play, you can't take a breath anyway. So we've been in it now for a few weeks.
More there, big dog. Anything else teed up, or you want me to roll out my final recruiting question?
I like your recruiting question there. Why don't you roll that bad boy out?
All right. Well, it's a two-parter. First of which, you know, you can feel free to throw out a couple if you'd like, but as I'm, you know, running around and doing some of the high school world stuff, are there any, Cardinals commits that I should be definitely keeping an eye out for? And part two, when I see them, what should I tell them you said?
Yeah. I feel like it's another really good group. I think there's a lot of them out there. I'm excited to watch they're just jumping into their season now. So again, we're very much focused obviously on what we're doing. So we're asking them to kind of keep us updated with their season and what their progression looks like. I just got a nice picture today from, you know, a couple of guys who played each other up here in Connecticut. And they just played in a game against each other, like one over the other, but they did take the picture together and they sent it to me and there
was the picture pregame or postgame? Do we know?
It was postgame. It was postgame. Okay. And then, so, you know, there was some comments in there, which are pretty, you know, pretty funny. Like, well, you know, we'll see him in the playoffs type of stuff, you know, but, but we're, you know, I think again, recruiting for us, you know, again, I feel like we're going to get a good quality of player at Wesleyan. I think it's really the importance of trying to find the kid who has a burning desire to get better once they're here. Right. Someone who's really got that motor, somebody who wants to kind of get better, continue to buy into what we're doing. Again, even because I've seen so many high level kids who are just, you know, all this 3-star, 4-star, whatever. And they just burn out when they get here or they're not as good as they might think. And we've had so many we've had 10 Division I kids in the last, you know, 10, 12 years. And really only one or two of them really panned out for us to be really good players, you know. And so they don't realize like at this level, there's a lot of guys who are they're just on the rise and they're just working so hard. So they turn themselves into these Division I type players. And maybe they weren't that a year or two ago. So we're looking for those types of guys who have those characteristics who want to get better. And we're really clear when we do talk to recruits about it's really hard, right? And it's not always about, you see the social media, everything looks great all the time. And wow, that must be an awesome player. But it's really all the behind the scenes stuff that are really, for you to be a great player that you have to do. And I just talked to the team today. Like if we're hitting, you know, we hit the wall for some of our guys, this is normal midseason. We're throwing the ball away. We're not as focused. You know, classes are getting really hectic with the workload, everything else. Like we have to find more time, like besides our just little 2-hour windows of practice that we have to get better. And if it's doing the extra shooting, the wall ball, just to get yourself in that good mind space, it's critical. Because if you don't do that, you're just depending on to do what everybody else does. And I think, you know, Salisbury does a good job. That's their kind of MO of the edge work they do. You know, that's the key. Like you said, getting better and just peaking at the right time. So I'm looking for players, really more of the characteristics of that as they talk to people and they come through the office. And if I sense like there's a little bit of, I'm looking to do like just to come here because there's, you know, it's Division III life and you don't have to work as hard. Like I shy away from those guys pretty quickly. And the number, I'll give you a little tip and I shouldn't give all my secrets away, but I will say one of the things I always ask a player is, you know, like, hey, what schools are you looking at? And so if they start giving me like a list of schools and then they mention the word, hey, I'm going to look at this school, but not to play lacrosse, off the list. Like regardless, it can be harmless and it can be like, hey, maybe I just can't play at that level. But the reality is like, if you want to play Division III or a high level lacrosse, like you should be looking at all those types of schools only. So that's just something that I just over years, I've been like kind of listening very carefully at these kids and listen to their kind of their words, you know, as we bring them in the office, because that kind of tells me about like what their path might be once they get here.
Well, hopefully any prospective athletes hear this and immediately are taking some notes on what not to do if they do end up getting that invite. Caleb, you got anything else for Coach before we let him go?
I think this was awesome. Yeah, thanks so much for your time. I loved your insights there, especially that last one. That's such a good point that I, you know, never really thought about there. So
you got to share that with the Swarm boys.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Coach a little team. So I'll definitely be passing that information along.
Oh, I know about the Swarm boy.
Oh, awesome.
I've heard about the Swarm boys.
Coach is a listener. He's a seasoned listener.
Heck yeah. All right, well, we got a great goalie coming up. I'll make sure to pass his information along with you. He's about maybe ninth grade or so. Yeah,
it's okay. I'll still be here hopefully in a few more years.
Perfect.
All right, Coach. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you coming on and all your insight.
Thanks, Dan. I appreciate it, Caleb. Thank you, guys. And thanks for all you do for Division III lacrosse. You guys are just awesome. You know, like there's a few guys out there that just you know, are so great to our game. And we appreciate the coverage because without you guys, there'd be nothing. So we do appreciate it. And thanks for having me on tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.